You're listening to the GAA Hour with Diarmaid Ling on Sports Joe.
Hello, you're very welcome to the Hurling Show on Sports Joe. I'm delighted to be joined this week to look over the championship action by Derek Honan, who's coming in from the south of Clare, and Waterford's Kevin Moran. I'm a little bit of a Billy No-Mates this week. Derek, I'm hoping to get you up in here beside me at some stage. Welcome, and the great Kevin Moran, Mr. Consistency. Kevin, I haven't gotten much of a chance to get a hold of you and get on the inside of what produced 10, 12 years of what I can only describe as, an incredible, consistent performance for Waterford. So it's lovely to have you. Starting in Clare, I suppose, Derek, like, good weekend. We had very different weekends, I think, myself and Kevin, but you were in behind the forces.
Yeah, great weekend for Clare. Where we were at after last weekend with Tipperary kind of maybe was a bit up in the air because no one knew. I suppose people assumed that Tipperary weren't playing great stuff, but for Clare to be able to back it up against Cork, was huge for them. And just down in Turles, you could kind of sense, I was down in Noel Ryan's before the game, and you could kind of sense that the Clare supporters were expecting a big performance, and the lads delivered, in fairness. So unfortunately, I didn't get out to enjoy the bank holiday Sunday after, but I know Ennis would have been rocking last night.
Yeah, no doubt. Well, I think Kevin made the most of his weekend. Kevin, what were you up to?
Yeah, I was on a quiet stag over the weekend, a bit of sightseeing and that in Liverpool.
It sounds like it was a quiet stag, all right. You can hear the rasp of a bank holiday weekend.
A lot of culture over there, Kevin, in that city.
Culture, yeah, very cultural city.
Yeah. You caught the Galway Kilkenny game, Kevin. Over there, or did you watch it from here?
I watched it from here, yeah. I enjoyed it. Very good game. Huge amount of tackling and good hits. And I found it one of the best games of the championship so far now. Really enjoyed watching it. It was intense, to say the least. But I think Galway came out, deserved to come out in the end with the win. But a really enjoyable game. Two good teams. And they'll probably meet again, if not in the Leinster final, maybe, or even in the quarter or semi-final, who knows. But they'll, really enjoyed watching it.
I mean, as intense as Limerick have obviously upped the intensity of the game in general. Galway are certainly not far behind at the moment, and Kilkenny are always carry that intensity. But unquestionably, the most intense moment of the day was probably after the game between Brian Cody and Henry Shefflin. I don't know what your, I certainly had a few ideas on it, but I don't know what your Derek, for you, did you catch the kind of slowed down replay of it? What was your sense of it? Was it, as Cody said afterwards, that it was just not much? There was a handshake in it, and he was upset after losing the game, maybe, and on Kilkenny go, or was there more to it than that?
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was this very strange moment. Just watching back and seeing the talk on Twitter and that, it looked strange. But then that's not to say it was strange. It just appears strange in the video. There's probably, like Cody said, I'm sure he was very upset, and I'd say they were upset with that last decision that gave the free to Galway, just because it was so crucial. In reading into the handshake, you could go down all sorts of rabbit holes there, and I'm not sure if there's anything there, but it might be the case. It might be
really Kevin. What was your take on it? No, all good. I mean, you could read into it. I'm like, Jeannie Mac. I don't know. Is it impossible not to like? What was your take, Kev?
Yeah, look, it's impossible not to read into it. Look, you could talk about different things. Look, we don't know the relationship they had. It was a contentious decision at the end of the match. Obviously, Brian would have been annoyed and things, but it has everyone talking as well. It's, you need these kind of things in games and things like that, but there's definitely something small to it. But look, who knows? I'm sure we're not going to find out exactly what it was, but there was an extra long handshake and a pause, and I don't think there was anything said, but Henry, to me, kind of looked a bit bemused by the whole thing. But
really, okay, I don't know, I suppose maybe the tendency is to read too much into it, I'm not sure, but like there's obviously, it seemed clear to me anyway that there was a, like an obvious hostility. And so I want to know what the source of that hostility is. And I think if you go back over Brian Cody's tenure as manager and the values that he holds about hurling, and hurling in particular, not like the management circuit, or, you know, like that, this idea of like he's managing Kilkenny and it's a privilege to manage Kilkenny and there's no expenses and there's no this, it's just this what he does and this is how he sees the game. And I can imagine a kind of a hostility towards a Davy Fitzgerald who's managed, you know, in different counties or whatever. That's what I would be kind of working off as his general understanding in the first place. For Henry Shefflin to be going to Galway as his, like, he was Cody's general, like, he, and he became King Henry outside that, but he was Cody's general, and now he's taking all the things he knows about all of those players and he's gone up to a Galway dressing room and he is in the business now of winning, and it's in the business of winning that he is, and he's going to, is he going to hold those secrets, or is he going to use those secrets and say, right, this is what he does in this situation, this is what he does in this situation? And as that kind of, that, like, almost like a, it's like, it's almost Shakespearean, like, as his general turning against him and giving away all the secrets, like, when you see the thing as simply, I think, as Brian, or as purely as Brian Cody sees it, I thought there was a huge amount on the, in that handshake, and there was comparisons made. I was reading online as well about Mick McCarthy and Roy Keane. Roy Keane and Mick McCarthy, both very strong men, but the two of them went up to each other, a half-nothing handshake, and walked away from each other without really looking each other in the eye. Whereas Cody, like, Cody leaned in and said, I'm here, I'm standing in this handshake, and I'm not backing down from it. And then Henry kind of went to go, and Cody held on to him and went back for more. And I thought Shefflin was gutted by it. Like, he just seemed to be, like, Cody looked into his soul, like... So I definitely feel like I've gone a little bit too far on it compared to where you boys maybe are at, but there was a huge subtext in it. I mean, genie Mac, you couldn't avoid, that's a serious situation in, like, Kilkenny, where Henry Shefflin is. Should he have gone in with Cody? Now he's with Galway. There are people possibly who are, like, hostile to the idea that he would be selling the secrets somewhere else. That's how I would see it, you know.
Yeah, I wouldn't necessarily disagree with you, Dermot. I just think, you know, it's hard to say for sure, but, like, it's not really the done thing in Kilkenny for Kilkenny managers to go and manage other rival counties. You know, obviously Eddie Brennan has managed against Kilkenny as well, but there probably wasn't as much of a chance of them being beaten by Laois. But, like, I suppose that does play into it, where there isn't that culture of former players going and managing other counties, and they probably want to keep, you know, all the talent in Kilkenny when they can. But the thing about Henry is, you know, he's plied his trade with Ballyhale. He's done an exceptional job there, and there's no doubt that he's very ambitious, and I'm sure he'd have ambitions to manage Kilkenny down the line, but there's obviously a man in place at the moment, so he had to go elsewhere to get his experience. And I don't think it's a bad thing necessarily for Kilkenny in the long term either, if a player like, or if a manager like Henry can go and get experience in the likes of Galway and come back then with that down the line and use that knowledge. And
Matt, our producer, made the very same point outside, and there's one thing about that I question, I suppose, is that there's a notion sometimes, or it is said in clubs around the country, you hear an awful lot in your GA club, you'd say, you know, it's all about the future, it's all about the kids, it's all about the kids. But those kids become adults at some stage, so I don't quite buy that it's all about the kids, because it's also all about those who were kids 20 years ago who are now in the prime of their athletic development, and it's like, it's also about them, you know. And I think Kilkenny kind of live and die on that sword as well. It's like, okay, do we want Henry Sheff? Are we going to say, oh, this is good for us in the long run? It's like they live in the moment of the game, and they don't want at any stage Henry Shefflin picking up experience at their expense, you know. There's like, I see what you're saying, and I agree with it in many respects. Yeah. And with the whole thing as well, I don't, it's like, to read into it and to try and create a hysteria about it or anything like that. It's just a particularly interesting, I'm not attached to whether I'm right or wrong on it. It's just it was a real insight into some of the dynamics of the relationship, maybe. I don't know. And then there's a possibility as well that was just the way that the game ended. I mean, I don't know, Kevin, what your take was on it. As a wing back coming out, like, would you... Should he have gone softly and tapped the ball down? Or do you, as a wing back, you played plenty around that area, like, you come sweeping?
Yeah, well, look, just, I suppose, to finish off what you're saying about the handshake, I think sometimes when you slow things down and, you know, you look at it for too long and things like that, it can, you know, it can make it worse than it actually is. But with regard to the final decision.
Oh, Kevin, he's fucking steel. Like, it's a steel. He looked like you slowed down. Cody didn't change in the whole frame. He was just giving him a steely look. So, like, I take your point, like, but my God, like, I don't know.
And the pullback makes it so much worse.
Oh.
yeah.
My God, yeah. It was a real, it was a moment. Anyway, sorry, go on, Kevin.
Yeah, no, the free at the end, I don't know what you think. Like, I suppose, the matches nowadays are very difficult to ref, and I just think in that moment, last puck of the game, Paddy Deegan knew the ball was coming down. And look, when you look back at it again in slow-mo and things like that, it, you know, most definitely wasn't a free, but I suppose it looked worse than it actually was probably in real time, and, you know, Colm Lyons just made the decision and gave a free in, but a harsh way to lose the match after getting back into it with 30 seconds to go. Mm. But I thought
Tom Monaghan played it a bit. I don't know, like it's the last puck of the game, and like made a best man win, like, and you know, kind of Machiavellian tactics, and that's fair enough. Like, but he made a meal of it, got his free, fair enough. But I would say, like, if my wing back, if I see a ball coming down, all he had to do in the situation, because I'm not sure who was outside him, but it was one of his own men anyway, all he had to do was get the hurl to it. Do you know when you're standing and you're isolated and there's a high ball coming down and you know there's a fella coming milling in behind you and there's a tension in your body because you're waiting for the hit? He has control of that situation because he's coming in from behind. Monaghan is totally exposed. So all he has to do is get into him and get the touchdown in front of him. When you go through, you're riding that line. Now, on the last puck of the game, maybe you have to go through. It's the only choice you have, you know?
In fairness to Aina Murphy, I think it was a good puck out, you know, because I think Paddy Deegan was a few yards off him, and that's why he had to make up that ground pretty quickly in order to intercept that play. And that's why I think Colm Lyons gave the free, because he came hard from a little bit far back. And I did think it was a good puck out, you know, in a tough environment. Last puck of the game, could have just easily settled it down and accepted the draw. And look, it worked for him because he hit the hand. The tackle was a little bit rash, even though it did, in that moment in time. And look, I suppose, you know, it was a difficult one for Colm to call, and people said, no, it definitely wasn't a free, but it looked a little bit rash from my end, I think, when you look at it in real time.
Yeah.
I kind of felt, my initial reaction was it was a free, lads. I'm not sure what you, but, and it's the nightmare decision, it's a nightmare scenario for a referee, isn't it, where, like, if it's not given, Kilkenny will score the point because he's picked up the ball.
Absolutely.
If it is given, so the referee really does decide the fate of the game there, like, which is not where he wants to be. But, like, being honest, in real time, I think I would have thought it was a free, and the ref only sees it in real time, so I couldn't blame him too much for it.
No, you couldn't. And I think it's a good point as well, Kevin, on Aina's puck out. Actually, I think what made that puck out 10 times better was he was just after letting in a howler. And he turned around. You could see it in his body language. He didn't even, there's a fraction of a second where you let yourself down. You know, a lot of the performance psychology is around, you know, maintaining the positive body, and you know, you're not reacting to things and responding to things in a way that weakens you or whatever. He just didn't, it was like a training goal, you know. He just turned straight around, straight into the back of the net, pucked the ball out, you know. I thought it was an impressive recovery from him.
Yeah, and look, a lot of times you're told, you know, when you concede it, when you concede a score, just calm everything down for a couple of seconds. But in fairness, he saw the opportunity, and look, it worked out, because I'm sure he was disappointed with, you know, the previous play that went in that got Kilkenny what looked like it was going to be a draw. But look, it worked out for them. Galway are delighted they're moving on. It was a huge win for them. And, you know, Kilkenny and Wexford now are a little bit under pressure. And, you know, whoever wins that game looks like they'll go through.
Yeah. What did you think at the midfield in particular, I think, for Galway? I mean, it seems like a bit of an ideal combination. Tom Monaghan, he's so busy and he's so fast and he's in on the breaks, and Joseph Cooney has that ability to push in, draw two or three men in, and then give it back out to Tom Monaghan to create play. I don't know what they seem to dominate that section of the field. I don't know, what was your take on it?
Yeah, you know, I agree. They looked really, they looked like they knew each other inside out. They were working very, very well together. Joseph Cooney's an absolute fantastic player, in my opinion. He's gifted. He's extremely quick. I remember playing against him a few years ago. He's extremely quick.
Did you mark him?
I would have, yeah, God, I would have played, marked him.
What was your plan for him? Because I remember him scoring a point there on Sunday. I was thinking, I don't know what I would do with that man. Like, he's huge. He's skillful. Huge. He's
good on the ground for such a big man. Like, he's probably 6'2" or 6'3", but
at least. You know,
he's an extremely good player, very underrated. And I thought he worked well with Tom Monaghan. Tom Monaghan was very good as well. You know, he was industrious. He was breaking the line. He was working hard. He was getting in the tackle. And then, you know, popping out. And David Burke then coming back deep as a wing forward. You know, a very experienced midfielder, top player over the years. And I just thought he was getting on ball. And, you know, that area of the field, the middle third, you know, we always talk about it. They definitely got on top there. They really, I suppose, put their best foot forward from that position. And Joseph Cooney was just, I thought he was the best player on the field yesterday. I thought he was brilliant.
Yeah, yeah. Were they looking at it from the outside? Like, do you feel like Shefflin got one up in the tactics? Like, overall, they were the better team? They were more organised? Or was it... Sometimes I think Galway and Kilkenny, they have a real interesting relationship. Like, I mean, it's four... I think Galway have four wins, one draw, one loss in the last six outings. Kilkenny dominated for a few years before that, but there was always something of a bogey team. I always got the sense in Galway, there's a big physical but open style of hurling. How did it look in terms of the layout?
Yeah, I thought Kilkenny, you know, like we said, they, you know, they went back to an old traditional route. Right? They didn't play through the lines as much, I know. And when they did, I thought their hurling didn't look as sharp. And I saw Kilkenny in the league in Nolan Park against Waterford. That was a couple of months back now. And like that, in the first half, they didn't, their touch for, you know, it's such a strong characteristic of Kilkenny hurlers. I thought it was a little bit off. And I thought the same then yesterday. And, you know, they stayed in the game throughout like they always do, you know, with the hitting the likes of Wally Welsh and that and creating goal chances. And they did need those goals to stay in the game because other than that, I thought they were outplayed. But, you know, as a... From a system point of view, I thought Galway, you know, used the ball better, knew exactly what they were doing on the puck out. So Kilkenny, I just thought, were a little bit, kind of went back to basics and, you know, man on man, get in around the ball. And, only for, as I said, those goal chances, they, you know, Galway could have been a little bit further out of sight. But that's what I felt on it. And I just saw it earlier in the year with Kilkenny in the league against Waterford. I thought... Just a little bit surprised then because they're such good stick men, the Mall, and I just thought, you know, that's twice I've seen it this year that I thought when they do run through the lines and you know, put the man under pressure, you know, ball to hand, it was just a little bit off, their touch was a little bit off and they kind of relied on, you know, what they were good at kind of for the last 20 years, let's say.
But, yeah, while not quite having the finesse to do it, maybe. Brian Kilcannon, full forward, Derek, a position you know well. I mean, just even from his point alone, it was an outrageous score to take on and, I mean, absolutely nailed it. How do you see him developing?
Yeah, I thought I was very, very impressed with him, actually. And he got a... I don't know how many points he finished with, but nearly every one of them was a highlight, you know. They were all, he won some great ball coming out and over the shoulder, was able to score from all angles. But that angle score from the end line was, you know, spectacular. And in fairness to him, he won the ball in that position. He turned around, he checked behind his over his right shoulder to see was there a supporting player. So he was looking for the better option first. And when it wasn't there, he said, okay, I'll take it on. And it's kind of like the sort of... the shooting you'd be doing, you know, messing around down in the field.
Yeah.
You know, trying to score from behind the end line, that's starting to put a real whip on the ball, just come across it. It was an outrageous score, actually, a really impressive one. But he got a few more that were quality as well, and he had a really good game.
Yeah, they're developing well, Galway.
They are. I thought, you know, I agree with Kevin, it was a really good game. And, you know, something in Munster, maybe we're... somewhat, sometimes we overlook the Leinster Championship and, you know, everyone's talking about the strength of the Munster Championship. But, I mean, those two teams yesterday, you know, would be extremely competitive in Munster as well. And I think, you know, it'll be interesting when we do get out of the provinces coming up against them because there's two quality teams there. And I expect both of them to come out of Leinster, you know.
We'll move on to Clare and Cork, two teams who might get on okay if they were in Leinster as well. You were happy enough, Derek, with the all around performance. John Conlon at centre back. I know you're close to John. I thought like it seems like there's a lot building from there. He's holding that position well, and there seems to be a lot building from there. And now with with Duggan back, with Shane O'Donnell, like it's... Do you know, I want to ask you about something actually, Derek, and it's an idea. It's just something that I've thought about for a while. You might have been involved in it, so I don't know if you can talk about it in the way you might want to. I'm not sure, and that's fine. But I felt in the last year, I think it might have been Davy Fitzgerald's last year, and there was a bit of a fallout with Davy O'Halloran and a couple of players. And I remember thinking at the time, that's going to be difficult to get over because the players, in some senses, kind of sided with Davy Fitz and maybe sided with the way that the they wanted to play on in a sense as well and didn't want to go down maybe too much of a battle or whatever. And I always thought that when a couple of players were sidelined maybe in that it was going to be difficult for a group of lads who've grown up and played the game together to get over that. And it subsequently kind of proved to be like that. There was things kind of for the last 4 or 5 years have been, it went from on the field then more to off the field with stuff at the county board and that. But it seems now, from talking to Niall McIntyre, who was down at the game, he was saying that Brian Lohan came over to the crowd after he was maybe looking for somebody. He wasn't going over to like congratulate himself or anything like that. He just came over and he felt this real sense of appreciation from the crowd that the steeliness that we talked about is kind of finally reorganising things that fell apart a few years ago. But now you get the sense that there's something coming back. The promise that we all kind of felt was in a lot of these players. I know there's a lot of players added and a lot of players have finished, but am I a million miles off with that, or what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, there's probably a good bit in what you've covered there, Darren, but I suppose the first thing, you mentioned Davy and that, I think Davy O'Halloran and Nicky O'Connell that time, that was probably very badly handled, and I think from the player's point of view, it was badly handled as well, but you know, that's going back a good few years ago now, and there was a subsequent manager in between Brian and Davy as well, Don Maloney, who did a really good job kind of recovering that goodwill
and
getting
absolutely.
the public behind the team again. And like last year, Clare were knocked out by Cork inside in the Gaelic grounds, and everyone in the Mackey stand, all the Clare supporters in the Mackey stand stayed on, and the players stayed on the field for a good while, and eventually they made their way off. But there was a really positive reception for Brian and all the players as they walked off, and you know, they were all clapped off by the Clare supporters having just been knocked out. So there's a huge amount of goodwill towards both the players and the management in Clare. And like I touched on it earlier, down in the square in Turles on Sunday, you know, you could kind of get a sense of real excitement, and definitely I think the Clare supporters were probably that bit more optimistic than their Cork counterparts, as I was, you know, just looking in the pubs and that, like there is a good buzz around Clare again, and definitely that goodwill, and people are looking forward to the games and really hoping that the lads do well and fully behind them, you know. So I'd agree with your point. I think that's definitely been recovered, and Brian has played a big part in that, and Donald Maloney and subsequent managers have played a big part in that as well.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's happened. I think you can see the patterns in some senses in different places, where a manager comes in who has maybe more of a more army kind of style of organisation and strictness, and then you need somebody kind of to come in afterwards and give him a bit of a hug after it and say, look at you, like, you know, you're not at war, it's okay, we can relax, let the systems relax, let the body relax and enjoy your hurling again, you know. And it seemed definitely with Donald that he knew all those players, all of you guys, inside out from a very young age, and he'd been looking after you very well. So I absolutely take that. Rory Hayes probably typifies Brian Lohan's what Brian Lohan is bringing to it. I mean, Rory Hayes is his own man, and he's developed himself in the way that he plays the game, but he certainly has that non-compromising cornerback approach that you love to play with and hate playing against.
Yeah, it's brilliant to watch him, actually. Just the way he takes on the game, and I think it was McIntyre actually wrote an article about how O'Connor was greeted by him coming onto the field, and he's just a nightmare to mark as a forward. Like, I haven't actually marked him, but just watching him, he's so physical, he's in your face, and then he attacks every single ball from the front, you know. He never waits, he never lets you win it and defends, then he wants to win that ball first. And yeah, very I suppose would remind you a bit of Lohan, but maybe has a bit more to do before you can be compared there.
Yeah, it's not the comparison. It's just there's something in the approach that you can imagine the manager looking on saying, "Yeah, I like that." Like you can see why he picks him. Like
you'd know why he picks him.
You would.
He typifies what Lohan would like to see out of a defender, but he's having a great year so far. But he's had a few good years now, to be honest, and he's emerged as one of the top cornerbacks in the country.
He has, unquestionably. Up the other end, Kevin, what would you do? I don't know, what would you with Shane, with Tony Kelly, maybe for midfield, Duggan, or closer in, Tony Kelly and Shane O'Donnell in particular, maybe as a wing back, at centre forward, if he's drifting out, how would you take on Tony Kelly? How do you stop his influence in the game?
Well, look, I think Clare are very clever with their use of Tony Kelly, because they know he's going to be, you know, he's going to be tightly marked. He's always going to be, there's going to be serious attention focused on him. And we played Clare this time last year, actually, first round of the Munster Championship. Last June it was. And same thing, you know, we focused on Tony a bit, but, you know, all the other players that Clare have, they're no mugs, and I think a lot of them are prospering from the fact that Tony's going to be marked, and there's going to be space created from the fact that he's been marked. And obviously Tony himself is, you know, extremely difficult lad to handle. And but as I was saying, the caliber of players that Clare have, you know, they're probably, you know, on par with Waterford as the two best team served to try and take down Limerick, in my opinion.
Dara, would you agree with that?
Clare were probably written off by a lot of people before the championship, which I was fairly confident going into the championship. I thought last year they were unlucky, you know, they beat Waterford in the Munster championship, and then I thought they were lucky against Tip, and they were beaten by Cork. Cork were a better team that day, but, you know, the addition of Peter Duggan and Shane O'Donnell has kicked on Clare another bit since then. I've probably made my feelings clear. And I do think Limerick are a good bit ahead of everyone. Clare, Waterford, they are at a similar standard. And, you know, there's a few more teams knocking around at that same level, in my opinion. Clare's two games so far as well, like Tipperary and Cork, great wins for Clare, but you'd have to say the opposition has probably slipped back from where they were last year. We haven't got a fully gauge yet on where we are really as a county, but they've done everything that's been asked of them so far, you know.
You'd always be looking for a response to a goal, you know, like we were talking about the Kilkenny goal, a response to a goal and a response to a sending off. Dean Galvin sending off, I think maybe he was unlucky when he turned that the butt of the hurl was out, and it may have looked like he had, to the referee, he just saw the extended butt of the hurl and decided he'd struck him with that. And, you know, whatever it is, everybody was pretty confident that it wasn't maybe a red card. But there was Clare response, Kevin, you know, you're looking for, you were a player whose response was depended upon. You can't depend on everybody for the correct response, but there are players who you always depend on for the correct response in some senses. But I thought Clare responded really well to the sending off because it was a time when the energy was kind of shifting in the game.
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, you spoke about energy there. I think that was the big difference between the two teams, the energy that, you know, that Clare had in comparison to Cork, you know, ferocity in the challenge, getting numbers around the ball. But you're right, they responded really well. Obviously, Cork, you know, they have some great players and that they got a run. But, and, you know, I think the goal at the end put a bit of gloss on it. But yeah, I'm extremely impressed with Clare. I think they have some serious players. I thought they'd win yesterday before the match myself, and, you know, they looked to be a 6 or 7 point better team. Likewise, the previous week against Tipperary, they looked far, far superior to Tipperary. I think they've really good players. They're really behind the manager. The fans are really behind the team. You know, it just, you know, there's something, you know, they seem to be going in a really, really good direction, and, you know, it seems to be a happy camp, and, you know, they I think they'll have a long summer ahead.
Yeah, it's looking like it. On the other side, I'm slow to talk too much about Cork, because I feel after maybe the last couple of games that there's been a lot of analysis about Cork and the teams that they've been playing. It almost wouldn't, it wasn't essential, you know, the performances that were clocked up against them. And I'm kind of at the point now where it's like, well, look, this is just how good Cork are. There's no point in overindulging as to why they're not doing this and why they're not doing that. It's like, well, it doesn't really matter why they're not doing this, but they're not doing it, and that's the standard that they're at. Now, it might be particularly harsh towards Cork, I'm not sure, but one of the things that stood out to me after the game was looking at Kieran Kingston's comments, and this is where I'm wondering a little bit of the source of that malaise in some respects, is that the first thing was the criticism. The players didn't stand up, the players were put off, or the players weren't able for, or I'm not sure what the phrase was, but anyway, the long and the short of it is it was because people in Cork were criticising the style of play, and that got in on the players, and so they had a very slow start. Now, I mean, I think he's somewhat responsible for the creation of the style of play. Obviously, that does rest with the players, but this is a style that they're playing, and it's obviously an order that's coming in that they have to wait for the pass to be on. So that's up for criticism when it works or doesn't work in the way that it had done so spectacularly. And then the other thing that he had said was maybe there was too much expectation on the players after the league that they had and being in the All-Ireland final last year. And I thought to myself, well, there's two points now. So it's the expectation of people and it is the criticism. And I just thought it was a total and utter lack of self-ownership of the fact that Cork are looked to be in some kind of self-destruct mode. I'm not sure. Like, it's easy to play well when you're 11 points down, because, you know, we've been in those situations. You're getting beaten and all of a sudden the shackles are off and you play a bit of good hurling because there's nothing to lose. Cork are... It's in maybe not disarray, I don't know, but it's certainly not impressive to look at in any shape or form, Derek.
Yeah, it was very un-Cork like, really, wasn't it? Those comments, they were like, you'd associate with Cork supreme confidence, like, But I was a little shocked. It kind of struck me as someone who's not really enjoying being in the position maybe that he's in at the moment. Because I didn't, you know, I just wouldn't associate that with Cork at all ever. And even against Clare, they've had the upper hand over the last few years. They've consistently beaten Clare, and I kind of feared that coming in. I did think there'd be maybe a bit of a malaise in Cork, but that the fact that they have had the upper hand on Clare would give them that confidence to go again. But honestly, in the first half, they looked like you know, for the first 25 minutes anyway, they didn't look like they were up for it. They looked lagging in energy. They did play a bit of hurling then for the last 10 minutes of the first half, and they came into it again after the red card. But, like Kevin said, I think Clare were probably 7 or 8 points a better team, and only for that red card, which wasn't a justified red card, they would have wound up winning by that much. If you're Cork, you have to look for some positives. And I think, you know, Alan Connolly coming on, did stand up and was counted, scored one great point to start the match, and the goal he got, he had no right to get it, and he still wound up beating Hayes to the ball, actually, and getting in. And the other thing I'd say was, you know, they got a couple of hidings off Limerick, Waterford and Limerick in the All-Ireland last year, and my big criticism was like, okay, you're getting a bit of a hiding here, but show a bit of fight, start a row, you know, do something. Hadn't done it in those games. But I did think, in fairness to Robert Downey, who had a good game, he showed a bit of something about him where, you know, he wasn't taking any step back. He came out and got involved, and he had a really solid game. So your full back line and Alan Connolly coming on and that bit of kind of passion and drive not to be walked all over by Downey, that's kind of what you want a bit more of.
Yeah. I mean, I think in some senses it's a little bit harsh, because I think the Robbie O'Flynn chance goes in, Kingston gilt-edge chance as well. Like, you know, they did create four very, very good goal chances that on another day would have gone in. And I know when you get like four goals as opposed to like 28 points or whatever, it does tell about the play. But as you know, well know, Derek, goals win games in a big way. So like, if they get those, maybe they're not as far off. I don't know, Kevin. Are you like, what do you see in Cork? Are you surprised by them, or?
I am surprised, and I'd be cautious to the fact that they're playing Waterford in 2 weeks' time. You know, like, everyone's out, and they're like on the Sunday game the other night. Just like the first thing that the highlights of the match were talking about Cork, you know, and how bad Cork are and things like that. And maybe that's the level they're at, and they do get a lot of criticism. But like that, they could come down to Walsh Park in 2 weeks' time, and, you know, put on a huge display. And if they were to turn over Waterford, you know, they're still in the championship, and they've Tipperary the last game, but certainly they do seem, you know, not even lacking confidence, but just energy. And yeah, I agree with Derek there. Rob Downey and particularly Connolly, I thought, were absolutely brilliant. You know, so you can't just generalise and say, oh, they'd no fight, they'd no this or that. So a lot of them didn't on the day, but you know, they could get that right in a couple of weeks' time and still stay in the championship. They're too good a team and too good a players to be, you know, beaten the manner that they're being beaten at the moment. And
but it's in the engagement, isn't it? It's in the engagement. It's like, it's not that they don't have fight. Like it's in.
Yeah.
You know, you see the clips that were shown last night. Looking at them, well, I only looked at them this morning coming up on the train. But looking at the clips anyway, it was like, just players not being touched, like, you know, just given this space, this open space. Now, it's easy to pick out five or six things in any game because the game sometimes does create that spaciousness. But you do see that evasive kind of running around. The modern game of running through is a bit of a struggle for the type of player that Cork have across the board. Like, not every one of them, obviously, but just in the in that necessity of breaking the line. They're not quite there.
Yeah, I think maybe some of they're all a bit alike, maybe, you know, and they're missing the likes of a Bill Cooper, who was a, you know, really, you know, fantastic tough player for Cork over the years, or a Christopher Joyce wing back, you know, real tough solid player, and maybe they're missing a few more of those. You know, they are young, they're playing to a new system, they are under a bit of pressure, they are listening to the outside noise and to the bit of criticism, but there's no reason why, you know, they can't get their season back on track with one big win. But yeah, it's just surprising, their energy is off. Even they just seem like a team on the floor, just know things aren't going great. Even when they got a couple of scores or a goal, there's no real passion and, you know, in the man's face and, you know, wanting to win the next ball and go again. That's kind of what's lacking more so than anything. Now, in the bat of an eye, they could get a ball and turn the inside out and hang it. But
it's that consistent
energy, I thought, was kind of lacking. And maybe there's a bit more going on behind the scenes than we know, but they do seem in, you know, just playing below par. But as I said to you, I'm slightly cautious of giving them criticising them too much, because they could put egg in your face now and
you could be up on the dressing room wall inside in Cork before the game in 2 weeks'
Jesus.
Time
it's a big game for us down here as well, you know.
Yeah it is, for sure. The consistency, how much of a value did you put on consistency, like, either in your own, like, are you surprised by how some players go from 95 down to 70 down to 50 and then back up to 75? Like, it was something that was very clear, and I want to clarify and qualify as well at the start. I think there's something when you say about somebody being consistent, it's almost like a lack of brilliance and a lack of poorness. There's a consistency in the middle, but to be consistently excellent, which I think is one of the defining characters of your career, how much value do you put in that consistency as an intercounty hurler? And is it always understood how valuable that consistency is?
Yeah. I think, you know, that's the hardest part, isn't it? You know, it's like, and when you're playing big matches, no matter how well you play, you're always thinking about the next game, isn't it? Because if you play poorly, you want to play better. If you play well, you're kind of saying to yourself, how am I going to maintain that? You know, so it's the consistency on your day-to-day and your training and your things like that is, you know, so important to bring consistency to your matches. And I think that happens over time. And you do see particularly younger players, you know, going through better periods and things like that. And, you know, 95%, all of a sudden, they could be taken off the next game. And that's the nature of, you know, athletes and sports people. You know, they have to learn from those days, and the days that you're taking off, you might learn more from that day than the previous day when you're a man of the match. So building that consistency into your game is probably the hardest part of being any top level sports person, you know. And that's what we all strive for. And certainly when I was playing, it was always the, you know, in your mind that the next day was, you know, the more important again.
Do you remember going through a poor patch, Kevin? Because I struggle to remember. I've definitely got some holes in my memory from games over the last 10 or 12 years. Like, but I mean, it's someone who just consistently reached it, like reached a very, very high standard and kind of continued to do so. Even when I thought, Ginny, Kevin, now maybe it might be time to go this at the start of the year or whatever, and all of a sudden you'd be still there in the end of the summer rocking up huge performances. Like, do you remember a time where there was where the confidence was gone? Like,
yeah, well, look, I suppose at the start and at the end, really, is to answer your question, you know, at the start I would have had a lot of kind of, you know, difficult days, I suppose, and particularly playing maybe in positions that I wasn't suited to and being taken off and things like that at very early in my career. And, you know, I think...
Did you ever get skinned earlier in your career?
Oh, I did. Niall Gilligan skinned me before the first match. Jesus, stop.
He skinned many.
Yeah. And like you said, then towards the end of your career, you're just, there is times when you say to yourself, God, this is getting that bit harder. The level of performance isn't where it needs to be. And, you know, it's probably stayed an extra year or two, if I'm being honest. But that was just the environment I was in. And with the likes of Liam and Mikey coming in, it was just hard to turn your back on it. But yeah, look, that's, some barren spells there where confidence is low and you're just, all you want to do is go out and play a really good game, and you'd give anything to do it. And so that can be the hardest part of dealing with inter-county hurling, yeah?
Yeah, for sure. Derek, never a problem for you either, consistency, was it?
Yeah. No. Consistently injured was my problem.
Consistent.
Kevin had a great career there. How many years did you play?
2006. What was it? 15 years. 15 long years, yeah.
My God. 15 years. So, by God.
The first few years were grand, though. It wasn't like it is now.
Actually, that was one of the things I was thinking about. I suppose, and it is because of that consistency in terms of, like, you know, consistency comes in your preparation and it comes in your commitment to your ideals and what the game is and what you won't stand for when you cross over the line and things like that. Like, these are the basis of what it is to be consistent. But the game changed. The game changed hugely in your time. Like, it was a significant shift from that early stage, we'll say 6 to, I don't know, 13, 14, it seemed to just maybe to turn another little corner there. It had done so when Kilkenny and Tipperary went where they went to in maybe 2006, 7, I think 7, the league semi, league final in 2007 was like when it just went stratospheric, like they hit a real pinnacle and continued to grow. But you stayed consistent, but the game changed hugely. What did you see? What are the most noticeable changes from the last days to when you came in first?
Ah, yeah, look, it's, I suppose, chalk and cheese, really, you know. And the level it's gone to now is, you know, even higher again, and you're kind of saying to yourself, where does this stop, you know? But look.
Where are the improvements in those changes? What do you see as the improvements in them, for a start?
Oh, sure, the improvements are, you know, everything you need to know about your body, you know, your from your sleep to how much you can lift, to the calories you eat, to, you know, and you can tell an awful lot about where you are, whether you're fit. You know, there's so many devices and sports science out there to tell you exactly what you are. And then, you know, the training itself just took a whole new deviation, I suppose, and just went harder and harder and harder. And then as you get older, you're finding it harder to recover, and you're probably not getting in your what you should be doing from a gym point of view. And, you know, you're just, I found myself anyways, I was just finding getting training to be able on a Tuesday night and trying to recover to train on a Friday, you know, so that's 3 days later. So that's what I found difficult. But in between, there was a lot of five days a week, you know, and you're, if you're missing them. And towards the end, I kind of found that I was falling way off the lads, you know, who were getting the 5 and 6 sessions in a week and me only doing 2 or 3. That's what I found the most difficult.
Yeah. Was there any developments where you were thinking, do you know what, this was actually better in 2006?
I suppose the effort, some of the stuff, and Derek can tell you the same, like, you know, what you're expected to do. Some of the times you have to know your body and you have to kind of say, like, you know, I'm not able for this, so I have to pull this back a bit, I'm borderline injured. And you have to, you know, every player is different. And I think the hard thing is sometimes is just if you're tight or if you're sore and you're getting through a session that you're, you know, sometimes you have to know your body and you have to be your own man and stand up for yourself a small bit, in a sense that you know what you're doing. You're preparing yourself for 3 or 4 weeks down the line instead of going extremely hard and, you know, burn yourself out. That's what I found towards the latter end of my career. I was able to do quite well. So
is that hard for a young fella? Is it, it's definitely a criticism, but it's not a criticism of judgment of young fellas in the game now at the moment, because I'm not sure what it's like in the environment, but definitely the environment that they come into can sometimes be one of like, well, this is what we're expecting. This is what you have to do. And the player gets less of that opportunity that when you grow older and you're more established, you say to yourself, well, look, I'm telling you what my limits are. I know my body. And a 22-year-old, 23-year-old, who you think would actually benefit from being encouraged to stand into their own shoes, like, and say, you have to stand your ground and you have to be willing to lose your place on the team. You have to be willing to lose a place on the panel. Like, you can't be held over. Your athletic identity can't be held over to at the cost of your body, because in the long run, that's bad for you. But it seems like that's, I don't know, maybe the environment has changed again. Like, maybe the managers now are like listening to players an awful lot more. But it certainly seems like maybe as players, particularly younger players, we take a little bit too much more than we should.
Yeah, and that comes back to trust as well, like, where, like, the manager has to trust the player to say, you know, okay, if he tells me this, it's coming from a place where he wants to succeed as well. And that's not always the case, where the manager will say, no, look, you have to do X, Y, and Z, and there's no compromises whatsoever. Or, like, you know, trusting players around to do their own work, to do their own hurling alley work or their own gym work, you know, oftentimes, and that frees up a lot of time where other managers would say, no, you have to drive an hour and a half to do that up here because I want to watch you doing it because I don't trust you doing it on your own.
Yeah. Oh my God, it used to break my heart, that dynamic of having to go back down to Wexford to train, or looking at a manager saying, you're going to do an hour and a half in the car to do an hour and a half of gym work to get in the car for an hour and a half. It's like, that fella's going to have hamstring injuries, I mean, for the rest of the summer. Like, but that was what they were expected to do because the manager decided.
Yeah. But the time commitment and that, like, is gone through the roof. Like, I mean, you're talking about it's like having a second job, really, and you're putting in 30, 40 hours a week with the whole thing. And the effort that the players are putting in at the moment is just outrageous, really, you know, at times. And I suppose that makes actually that the whole issue of the expenses at the moment and the GAA trying to hold that over their head and the GPA having to fight them on that all the more disappointing, because the effort and the time that people are putting into this is just so exhausting that, you know, they should be well looked after.
Yeah, absolutely. Sometimes I think, it's not a remuneration, or it's not... It balances things out in some way, that there would be that freedom to say, look, at like, it's April and I'm tired and I've gone hard for you now, and I'm going to take a week off, and I'm going to go off with my girlfriend, or I'm going to go off with the lads, and I'm going to take a week out to just decompress, and I'll come back and I'll be a much stronger player for it, as opposed to staying going and never really getting a chance to rest. You know, that thing of having to be in from October to now July or whatever with no kind of break, you know, it seems like it increases the chances of a bubble developing and maybe not developing more outside of the game. But it's also just, it just seems to be overloaded a little bit. Like, that was what the GPA found out recently in that study they did a couple of years ago, that a lot of players weren't actually happy with the work-life balance, in a sense, when you're calling it the GAA work. Just back to the hurling, Wexford, I'm keen to talk about Wexford because we actually won. Five goals went, I think four, if not five, went in after Rory O'Connor, who I thought was actually charged at the time, but Leash lost a man in the tackle, and then Wexford let rip. I don't think either of you are too fearful of Wexford coming out of Leinster and causing any trouble, are you? Or am I wrong in that? Kevin, please tell me I'm wrong in that.
Look, I think they're a bit off, I suppose. You know, they might get in as maybe the third team in Leinster. You know, they have a massive game to win if they're to do that. But I do think they're a little bit off it.
Can they beat Kilkenny in Nolan Park?
I'm not so sure. No, I don't think so. If I'm being honest, but look, they have some marquee players like the likes of Rory O'Connor would make any team in the country. And, you know, if they're on fire that day, who knows? But just they just seem to be a little bit, maybe they peaked a little bit too early in the year. And it's kind of hard to get it back on track. And, you know, it's you spoke about overload there. Everything's just coming so fast and so quick, and the games are getting more important as the year goes on. And, you know, there's not actually long left in the year. So, you know, it'll be a huge game for them in Nolan Park, and who knows, they might get in, but I'm not sure they in the top four though.
Yeah, the standard maybe in Munster at the moment, but certainly the excitement is going to be in Leinster on that last day. I mean, Dublin had another win, not very impressive, but I think Dublin definitely respond an awful lot better to playing a Wexford or a Kilkenny. They seem to want to really climb those steps. Looking forward below with you fellas, I suppose if Limerick are back up against Tip, how big a loss, Derek, is Keane Lynch to Limerick's desires for another Munster title?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting actually really to see Limerick. It's probably a good opportunity. They're two games won, you know, they're going to progress. It's probably a good opportunity for them to develop their squad a little bit. Carl O'Neill has come in and played a good few minutes now and looks to be a right good player, you know, and he can only improve, you know, with the opportunity that's probably there with a couple of lads missing. And they'll need to find a few more lads, because, you know, I'm not sure whether Hayes is going to be available. Really, I think against Tipperary, you know, Tipperary are going very poorly at the moment, and you'd expect Limerick to win, you know, even down those lads. I think they'd probably win that fairly comfortably, but whether they can just develop a few players and have the opportunity to do that, and while also making sure that the lads who are injured are coming back fully fit when they do come back, that'll be their main goal. You know, I don't think, you know, Limerick are in a great position, and they're absolutely flying it, and I think they're a good 8 or 9 points ahead of, you know, the next best team. But the only thing that might catch them is those injuries, and maybe, you know, indiscipline down the line could be an issue, but that's the only thing that they have to fear.
Speaking of indiscipline, actually, Kevin, just thinking about Joe Canning's comments in the week. He was talking about refereeing, and I definitely would have looked at you as a player who a referee could go to you and say, like, you were a leader of the team. You could go in, you weren't too hot-headed, you had a reasonable kind of... Yeah, you seem to be reasonable on the field most of the time anyway, as would be expected. And you could go to a referee and say, like, what was that for? And the referee would address you directly, and then you go back to the players and say, do you know, this is what's going on here. And I don't know, I'm bemused now, I suppose. I thought it was great as a player maybe in some ways, but it is quite bemusing. I think it's something we have to probably challenge in the GA, that you can actually speak to another human being who's on the field beside you taking part in the game, and the game doesn't play, or the game doesn't happen without him, and he's as fallible as anybody else, and he's going to make mistakes, but that's what we all start with. We know that he's going to, some days we come out on the wrong side of him, some days we come out on the right side of him. That we can't have for abuse to officials, a very simple, like, red card, 6 month suspension, off you go, you learn your lesson once, you won't have to ever learn it again. And to have a system like that, that's built on a foundation of respect between people, and not in like a tokenistic, you know, every corporate interest in the company now talks about respect and values and all these things, but actually that you would respect the man in the field who's facilitating the play and be able to communicate with him like he's a normal human being. I know tensions flare and we get intense, but to be able to have a player who can speak to the referee and navigate that and then communicate back, surely that's, is it a better way than what we have at the moment? Like,
yeah. Look, in the ideally, yes, it will be the way forward. I just think if we're realistic about it, it's probably impossible to police in that sense, because in the likes of rugby, you've everyone within 5 or 6 metres of the ball. You've the referee there. He's able to call his players in quite very quickly and have a word at the captain. And there is a, you know, they respect the referee in an awful, you know, an awful good manner, and speak to them very mannerly as well. Compared to the likes of your GA, you could have a lad 100 metres away and you can't hear a thing. And, you know, so being realistic, I'm not so sure how talking to, you know, a leader on the field and how he can communicate that to his players could work. But certainly speaking, maybe there does need to be a little bit more help for the referees, because it's getting a tougher and tougher job. I was watching that match yesterday, and, like, you know, it's so hard. It's going so quick. There's so many hits and tackles and things like that, like we're borderline kind of what is a free and what isn't a free. So it's definitely needs help maybe more from the umpires or the fourth official or something like that. But it's just so intense and so difficult for one man to be doing it. It's, look, I don't have the answers for it, but it's something that has to be looked at definitely, I think, down the line, because it can be quite, you know, you're just going to have more and more mistakes and things like that from referees, and it's not their fault. It's just so hard and so quick to keep on top of.
It is. I almost shudder at the thought of giving umpires more power, because some of the decisions that umpires make at times, you just wonder what's going on. But I take your point, absolutely, and it'll bring up
maybe
standard.
Referees as umpires, you know, as a kind of...
I think that's just a numbers game, isn't it? It's like referees kind of have their umpires and they bring whoever, and sometimes there'll be fellas standing beside the goal and you wonder, Jenny Mack can even see the top of the post. Like, you just don't know. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. Derek, on that, what's your sense of that, Derek?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's like that. If you had referees in there, but just can't be done because those referees are relying on those umpires, you know, for their club games and go on to, you know, Fecal on a Wednesday night when you might want to be doing going to Fecal, so...
Who wouldn't want to go to Fecal on a Wednesday night, Derek?
So, like, you know, that's the problem there. But as well, like, you can't really implement the rugby system because, like Kevin said, rugby is just so stop start, and you could sit down and have a chat there in the middle of a rugby match, and it might be missed. Whereas, like, the hurling is just, it's all go on all areas of the field, and what's making it even harder for the refs now at the moment is, you know, that bit of feigning and play acting, where, you know, like I would have said, Ian Galvin's red card yesterday was never a red, but, you know, people are acting
John Conlon, would you have said it for John Conlon? Or
I couldn't really see that issue, like, on the you couldn't, because, you know, he turned into him. There might have been, like, look,
he did. I see your point, but I thought, it's a tough one.
An issue on it, but it was just obvious with the it was more obvious with Ian's one anyway. Okay, that's
it was. Like,
they're two clubmates of mine, so...
I know. Sure, I don't want to go down that road either.
I would have thought it was more obvious. So, look, that makes it an awful lot more difficult for refs, and it's not an easy job at all. So, I'm not sure how you can improve things, really. You should, like, you have.
So, you're just both... What I get is you're both in favour of just continuing to lorry abuse at referees. We'll leave it there. No, look, there's subtleties to the argument, and it's good to hear that from Kevin, actually, because it's not something I particularly considered. I think that there is maybe... A line, a player in either midfield, at the, you know, the centre back, the centre forward, the midfielder. So we're generally kind of three kind of leaders anyway, and you just have maybe a direct line of some sort. But I don't know how you'd find the centre forward anymore. Sure, Janie Mackey's in the corner back line half the time, and he's up in the corner forward, and it is impossible. And I think anything to slow it down as well. If you're slowing down the game, it comes at a cost. And I think part of that is actually just a bit. We have a little bit of an inability to accept the flawed nature of a referee and what he sees and the speed that he's seeing it. And I think if there was a little bit more forgiveness of referees from players and supporters, the arrival of more and more technology, like, are we going to need more technology? Is that a free? Are we going to slow it down and go back up to the camera and see, is that a free? Is it that important in the sense that you lose some days on the basis of a poor decision and you win some days on the basis of a poor decision? And over the lifetime, over your life spell of playing, like, that balances out fairly much. And I don't have any, there's no time where I can say they lost games because of decisions referees made, for sure, like, but they're not things you hold on to either, like, you know. I think if there's a bit more space for their fallibility, it wouldn't be such a big issue, and there wouldn't be this essential need for more and more technology and going up to the cameras, you know.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it definitely balances out. You know, I think if you look back on matches, matches that you've lost, if you look back over the 70, 75 minutes, there's an awful lot more things that, if you're reflective in yourself, that you did wrong more so than the referee, that could have had a positive outcome on the game. But yeah, like, the technology side of things, I think, look, it is difficult. We know, we accept that for referees, they're going to make mistakes, but it's probably... You know, to keep the games at the level that they're at, the speed they're at, and the intensity, it's probably the best thing that's going to fit for the time being, in my opinion, without adding huge amounts of technology and personnel and slowing down games and things like that.
Yeah, it's our necessity to get things right. Like, I don't know, sometimes it's interesting, I came up today and I was conscious that I'd really only caught the Sunday game because we had a performance ourselves yesterday on the beach as part of Failing the Bealtaine, and we were playing the hurling match that I've been playing down there for the last year and a half. And I was doing it with my partner, who's more of a choreographer and a dancer, and she was like, okay, we need to get this, and we need to get this organised, and those moves need to be right. And I'm like, look, we're going to sacrifice the perfection for something that's live and it's real and it's raw and it's and it's good. And it doesn't, we don't need, sometimes it's the seeking of perfection, I think, that like slows things down and makes it like, it becomes like these, we live and die on these one small decision, and it's like, it's bigger than that. And I love the rawness of the game from that point of view, and the fact that, you know, there are mistakes made, but if we could just welcome the mistakes as well as the good things, maybe we wouldn't get so het up about them. I'm not sure. That's the only.
You didn't tell us whether you won your wrestling match or not, Izzy.
I did, Derek. I had a full on wrestle as part of the performance. Myself and Timmy Creed, who did the play Spliced, a one man show that he did about his time hurling with Bishopstown. Actually, a incredible play. Myself went into the middle of the into combat, and we'd a wrestle. Umra Scall in Irish, and wrestling is actually, when you see it, I introduced this to a couple of the retreats I ran, wrestling, and somebody got on to me and said, look at the lexicon of wrestling around the world. There's like 10 or 12 Irish language words that have been butchered into other languages, but this, we have a real big tradition here, way back, of wrestling. So we put that into the performance yesterday as well, but it was a bit of a dance and a bit of a joke, and then all of a sudden we were in shoulder to shoulder, and it was no holds barred. Then it was like, made a best man win, and it was maybe 400 people on the beach howling and hollering at two fellas wrestling on the beach. But before the 400 people arrived, I wrestled Timmy, and he beat me he bent the shit out of me. I was thinking, oh god, I'm going to be embarrassed here in front of everybody, like, just, I'm just going to have my head squashed in the sand, this is going to be terrible. But I got lucky, and we were 1-1, so we'll have to go
third bout.
We'll see where the third bout's going to be. So anyway, look, I'd love to chat about that loads more, Derek, and thanks for asking as well. I didn't want to come on and be talking about the games at the weekend, having not given all of my time to the games the weekend, because we just had this thing to do, and it was a beautiful thing, because there was people playing hurling that you'd never see playing hurling. There was 10-year-olds in the game, there was women in the game, it was good, and it was wild, and it was something that's not on the GA. It's not important to the GA in some respects, but it is that community building outside of the GA community is also a good thing. So it's nice to chat about it as well. Thanks very much for coming on, lads. I appreciate your time. Thanks for tuning in and for bringing your experiences on the game. Kevin, it's lovely to chat to you, and lovely to have you on and gain some of that wisdom that you've accumulated over the 15 years and a stellar career that you had with Waterford. And Derek, yeah, great to hear your own unique voice again, and your read on things. So thanks for bringing us up close and personal with Claire. That's all we have time for on the hurling show, but join us next week. We'll be going over next week's games, Tipperary and Limerick, and looking forward then to how things are shaping up in Leinster. Garmagov.
You're listening to the GAA Hour with Dermot Ling on Sports Joe.
Donald Donovan is the left cornerback. He hits it. What? It's over the bar. Oh, holy Moses. What a match.
There's been a missing person in Clare for 81 long years. Well, today, that person has been found alive and well. And that person's name is Liam McCarthy.
They know as much about serious level sport as I know about the sleeping habits of the Ayatollah.
There's a streaker on the ground now. He must be a Kilkenny man, because he's quite happy with the situation right now.